Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Acrow First Half Financial Year 2022 Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. You may ask a question by pressing 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad. I must advise that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday the 10th of February 2020. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speakers today, Stephen Bolland, Chief Executive Officer, and Andrew Crowther, Chief Financial Officer. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, James, and thanks, folks, for joining us this morning as we go through our investor presentation that we released last night in relation to our first half FY22 financial results. So, very pleased to present our unaudited interim results for the first half of FY22. I'm extremely proud of the team across all departments and all of the branches in the Acrow business, and the really strong growth we're experiencing is clearly a testament to their commitment to providing our customers with first-class products and engineering services. Firstly, the key financial metrics, clearly we're really happy that they're all going in the right direction. Strong revenue growth of 38% from the prior corresponding period, up to $69 million for the first half. EBITDA up 51%, up to $16.7 million. NPAT up 118% to $8 million underlying NPAT. Again, very happy with our EPS growth of 3.28 cents per share for a half, up 94%. Also pleased to be declaring a 1.2 cent partially franked dividend for the first half's results. And I'm especially pleased with our return on equity continuing to improve and going north, which is clear justification that the appropriateness of our capital investment program over the last few years is certainly showing dividends and paying, the result clearly shows that the returns in the business are improving off the back of that capital investment program. In terms of the key achievements for the first half of 22, that key lead indicator that is so important to our business and also just our future forecasting and success of securing hire contracts, we had another very good result. We're up 33% year on year in secured hire contracts, $23.4 million for the half. That's continued already in the second half. We had an excellent result in January, where we were up another couple of million dollars on the previous January. So that's all going well for us. Pleased to say that the improvement in the results this year is all off the back of organic growth, not the impact for acquisitions. It's now over 2 years since we made the Unispan acquisition and 3.5 years since we made the Natform acquisition. They're bedded in completely part of Acrow. And so this result is a sort of totally off the back of organic growth. And we have had, and we declared this quite frequently about what we were expecting to see in industrial services over the last 6 months and going forward. Revenue up 158% year on year, sales contribution up 76%. I'll talk a bit further about what that's come off the back of and how important it is to provide some very strong balanced earnings in the business to complement our former earnings. We have been flagging for some time that we were going to see significant growth in Queensland formwork, which has been our flagship formwork branch for a long period of time, and we have definitely seen it. So 80% growth in higher revenue compared to the same period last year. And again, I'll talk a bit further about what's been driving that. The next point there about WASA and TAS is probably one of the things I'm most pleased about in this 6 months. One of the real pushes in the business has been to get ex-Unispan/Ulma product into markets where we didn't previously have the opportunity to hire those products out. And that's primarily Western Australia, South Australia and Tasmania. So we've been really successful and continue to be successful in opening up new channels for revenue off the back of our wider product range. And between those three branches, revenue was up 62% and sales contribution was up 118%. So that's a really important thing in terms of generating further growth in the business. And the last point around supply chain, look, it's a very challenging area clearly globally at the moment. We're not immune from that issue, but we've taken some really significant steps to minimise the impact, and our approach is let's try and turn this negative into a positive. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. And clearly, in some very strong areas, we have actually turned this into a positive in terms of generating more revenue and more profit in the business. In terms of major transport infrastructure projects, not going into sort of project by project that we may have rolled out in the past, but that's the dollars projected to be spent in major transport infrastructure. You can see we're not predicted to hit the peak of this until FY24, and we'll stay at the levels we are in FY22 for at least the next 5 years. And this is, we're talking transport infrastructure projects here. We don't include things, for example, like Snowy Hydro, which is, you know, the biggest infrastructure project in the country probably in the next 5 to 10 years. Very pleased that we are getting significant revenues out of pretty much every one of the major transport projects in the country. Our biggest revenue generating project for the year this year will be the Bruce Highway, Karora to Curra in Queensland. We've won two very significant packages on that project, and we provide hire equipment. We're selling consumables and also providing labour across that project, and that will generate over $10 million of revenue in our business this year. Melbourne Metro Rail, we're pretty much batting almost 100 at the moment on winning every new package that gets let on Melbourne Metro Rail. It will generate more than $5 million of revenue for us this year. Western Distributor has been going for some time and continues to operate for us with $3 million this year. And the Sydney Metro Rail, I think the important thing here is that whilst we've done $2.5 million on the existing Metro Rail project, it's what we're looking forward to now with the next two, the Inner West Metro and then the Sydney West Metro, that those projects are kicking off in the next sort of 12 months, is what we think we'll be able to generate looking forward significantly more revenues than what we've done on Sydney Metro. And Cross River Rail is still pretty much in its infancy for us, but we will do $2.5 million plus revenue on that project this year. Our formwork revenue by state, which is obviously one of the key drivers for us, you can see the great growth in Queensland year on year from $10 million to $13 million. You can see Victoria has continued to hold from that dramatic growth that we experienced over 18 months ago. New South Wales, that number is a little bit, it's not really representing the true picture. The New South Wales hire revenue, this is total revenue that we're showing here, but the New South Wales hire revenue has actually doubled over that period. In the 21 year, New South Wales got the benefit of a lot of revenue from sales of ex-hire equipment as part of the rationalisation of our fleet when we purchased the Unispan business. So that was all done. That was completed. That contributed around about $2.5 to $3 million into that number in the first half of 21. So it's saying in actual pure hire revenue, the revenue has doubled. And as we go into the second half of the 22 year, the New South Wales business is really going ahead leaps and bounds. And I think by year end, you'll see a significant uplift in revenues coming out of formwork New South Wales. And then Western Australia, as an example of those three, what we call smaller states, you can see Western Australia revenues doubled in between 21 and 22, and its profit is significantly higher. So we continue to grow our formwork revenues. We are growing now in every single state, including New South Wales, as I said, you'll see when we get to sort of full year 22 numbers. And this is still the key profit engine of the business. Hire equipment wins, as we mentioned earlier, up from work and a very strong picture in terms of what's in the pipeline going forward. Sorry, I just got a note to say the call's just cut out.
Hello?
That's back on. Sorry, apologise. I just got a text message from someone saying the call had just dropped out and just come back on. Talking now about our engineered systems and services, so the absolute key to the change of focus and the results of the business over the last 4 years has been our focus on engineering. Now 85% of our revenue comes from what we would classify as engineered systems, formwork and industrial, rather than 43% 4 years ago. We really are focused on providing our customers with engineered solutions to save them time, crane time, labour time, all the things that are, you know, obviously very expensive items on projects, and becoming more expensive. You know, the cost of materials and labour and et cetera on construction projects is clearly going up. We have invested a lot of, I guess, effort into a strategic investment into people and our engineering capabilities over the last 4 years. We've doubled since listing the number of engineers working in ACRO, and that continues to this day. So it's a totally commercially focused team. The whole focus on engineering was led by Matt Caparella, who has been the National Engineering Manager for the last 2 or 3 years. He's recently been appointed now as the Chief Operating Officer in ACRO, and we brought into the business as the National Engineering Manager working under Matt, a gentleman by the name of Evan Field, who is going to take us again to another level here. Evan ran his own engineering consultancy business in Queensland for a number of years, very successful, very well regarded by both our customers and actually some of our competitors. Evan is going to help drive a more broad approach to providing turnkey solutions to our customers across a range of all the products, not just the ACRO service offerings, but also in providing advice about general engineering services to each of our customers. So this is the key. It's absolutely the key to the growth of what's been the growth and the turnaround in the business. And you know, I'm very proud of the engineering team that we've got within ACRO. Mentioned earlier, we are on all these marquee civil projects. So you can see we're on all the key projects in the country. We also mentioned Snowy. I'll talk a little bit more about Snowy in a second. Giving some examples of our engineering expertise, how they apply in the field. So this first project, which is the part of the Western Distributor, this example, it was a very unique formwork requirement, and it was clear that we weren't going to be just able to utilise existing ACRO kit to provide the solution the customer wanted for this particular part of the project. So we came up with a specific design, manufacturing equipment in a spoke fashion just for this project that we sold onto the project. It is working extremely well for the customer, provided a very good return for us. And again, it's an example of, you know, we're not just looking at solutions that use our own hire equipment. You know, we will come up with the solutions that require some manufactured equipment, and then we'll go ahead and manufacture the equipment and sell them onto the product, onto the project. The second, which is, if any of you drive over the Anzac Bridge, you live in Sydney, you can't miss this now. The vent shafts on that project are standing out very high into the sky. I think this is almost like the opposite to the first project that we mentioned on the Western Distributor. This required us to come up with a solution using existing ACRO equipment, so the customer didn't have to go and buy a whole range of manufactured product that would have added a lot of expense to this particular project with the vent shafts because of their quite unique design. So our engineering team came up with a solution using our own gear, adapted in such a fashion that, again, the client here, which is Cedar Constructions on this part of the project, were able to not have to spend a lot of money on buying specialised equipment that was just being used on this job. They could instead have a higher solution by adapting an ACRO fleet onto the job. And the last example we give here is just this is really a classic example of now the combination of ACRO, Macform, Unispan into one business. So this project, the Landmark project, started off as a screens job for us, and it was quite a complicated screens job that we needed to design specifically for the design of the building. But off the back of the screens, we finished up providing basically the whole range of our commercial formwork products. Super cup lock, uni mesh, CC4 formwork, as well as screens driven by a hydraulic unit. So, and also handrail systems. So this is a classic example of bringing those three disparate businesses together now as one unit and providing, you know, complete solutions to customers such as this example. Supply chain management is clearly a challenge. It's a well understood, I think, global issue. And it's certainly, as I said before, not without challenges for us, but we're turning it into a positive for the business. So in three particular areas, we've got clearly extended delivery times on new equipment due to logistics issues and also availability of raw material. So it sort of pushed us to go and see whether we could find good quality secondhand material on the global market, especially in the CC4 category, which is a very strong former category for us. And we did. We found a supply of very good quality equipment in North America that we've been able to get our hands on at a significantly reduced price to the cost of new product, and it's basically almost as new. So that's given us both an advantage in terms of getting the gear here earlier than we otherwise would, and also in terms of the cost of the new capital coming into the business. There's clearly a well-understood shortage of shipping containers and a lot of increased freight costs across the globe. We've come up with a way of bypassing intermediaries, and we're dealing directly with shipping lines to secure availability and competitive pricing. Now, our cost of containers has still gone up significantly, as everybody's in the world has. But I've done some sort of benchmarking with some people I know who work in the logistics game about what we're paying for containers directly dealing with shipping lines, and we're paying less than what a lot of global logistics companies that are specifically paying shipping lines. And the third area is really important too on supply and trading terms. Now, clearly, you know, we've had a working capital impost off the back of increasing our sales, but also in terms of increasing costs of logistics. But we've been able to actually minimise that impact by having strong negotiations with a lot of our suppliers on trading terms. And where did we turn this into a positive? Especially is coming out in the category of timber and ply sales. So our timber and ply sales have gone up dramatically in the last 6 months, and especially in the last few months, and still going forward now into the second half of this financial year, both in volume and margin. That doesn't come without working capital impacts, but you know our margin on timber, which used to be lucky to be sort of 10 to 12%, is now running at around 30% on vastly increased volumes. So, you know, we turned this global issue around supply and supply of timber into a benefit into our business. In terms of the numbers and the breakdown of in our segments, you can see formwork, total formwork revenue up $4 million. Industrial services, clearly the big generator of revenue growth, $13 million. And commercial scaffold was up $850,000. Contribution margins, though, as you can see, formwork margin up by $5.8 million. I mean, this is the big profit contributor off the back of the higher revenue growth, but industrial services clearly $3 million in 6 months is a great result, and a flat result in commercial scaffold. I'll talk a bit further about that later. When you grow the business to this degree, you are clearly going to have increases in costs, both in you know your yard expenses and in labour, because we are employing more engineers and actually more salespeople. But 65% of the sales contribution has passed through to profit. So I think that's a great result when you can grow to the level that we are and still get you know two-thirds of the improvement in your sales contribution passed through to your bottom line. Sales contribution bridge. So this is what I want to see. Yeah. I want to see that where we're investing in our capital is where we're getting the growth. So we're investing our capital in formwork equipment, and we're investing our capital in some industrial services equipment. We've had nearly $6 million of formwork hire growth in this period. That's basically all off the back of capital investment. And we've had combined between industrial scaffold hire and industrial services labour hire, we've had a $2.2 million improvement in contribution over this period. And again, we wouldn't have got that without the capital investment program that we've undertaken. In terms of the segments, again, you can see formwork hire, as I mentioned, is the big generator. Product sales, whilst it shows as being flat, that is, again, because of a lot of the sales in the previous 6 months, previous financial year, were generated out of fleet rationalisation from ex-hire sales off the back of the Unispan acquisition. So old Acro equipment that we didn't need, we were able to sell and rationalise our fleet. But that's been significantly offset by, as I said, primarily the timber revenue and margins that have increased so significantly over this period and are continuing to do so today. So again, good growth in revenue, great growth in contribution, and very pleased to see the growth that we're getting out of Western Australia, South Australia and Tasmania, as I mentioned earlier. Industrial services is obviously the story in terms of total revenue growth, $13 million. Clearly, a lot of that revenue comes in labour hire, which generates around about an 18 to 19% margin for us, which is still very good, very happy with that for that business. Product sales, whilst and the margin has taken a bit of a tumble this year. Now, the key to that, and you can see the number of $8.4 million is a very high revenue in product sales. We made a strategic decision to sell quite a lot of new equipment onto the Snowy Hydro project at lower margins that we would normally sell to. Now, we're still talking 15, 16% margins on very big sales, of which all we do effectively is place an order and then the gear gets shipped. But we've made a decision to take a lower margin to get a strategic footprint on that project. It's going to be such a huge formwork project into the next few years that for us to be such a strong supplier of equipment and labour onto that job already, you weren't going to be able to make 25 or 30% margins on that project selling you equipment. So we've made that strategic decision. We're batting in about 100 here on almost every contract. Every contract we're targeting, the key project wins are busy. I mentioned Snowy. Mount Piper, which we're just doing a shut now that wasn't forecast to happen until the first quarter of the next financial year, has been brought forward. We've mobilised that in the space of about 3 weeks. That shut's going to generate about $3 million of revenue and about $800,000 of EBITDA that we didn't expect to have until the first quarter of next financial year. So great story, and look, we're continuing to push here. It's certainly part of the ACRO story going forward. It's very stable earnings platform, complements what we do in our formwork business. Commercial scaffold has been flat, which is not bad, but I think, look, one of the things I want to point out here is we had continued to do a number of reasonable scale projects, and as you can see, the labour and cartage margin year to year has deteriorated. We've made a decision across the eastern seaboard states, Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria, we're just not going to bother tendering on large-scale commercial scaffold projects in those states. It's not worth the effort. We can get far better returns just focusing on dry hire and small-scale projects, and there'll be reductions in cost of moving gear around and also in labour internally by just focusing on small scale. It's too competitive at the high level, and recently there was a large project in New South Wales that we were interested in. Competitor won it at a price that was like 50% lower than we would have been almost our break-even point. So it's just not worth the effort. We'll still generate good profit and revenue out of dry hire and smaller projects. Key contract wins. I won't go into these across. You can read those at your leisure, but I think the main point that I'd make here is that is across all sectors and geographies. Industrial services, formwork, there are some commercial scaffold projects in Queensland with Hutchison Builders, and then the screens projects in New South Wales, we'll mention on the second page, a very large screens project in South Australia, which would only be our second ever project of this nature in the South Australian market, Tasmanian project. So, we are winning good-sized new contracts across all sectors and across all geographies. I'll now hand over to Andrew to run through the financials before I wrap up on our forecast and our outlook.
Great. Thanks, Steve, and thanks for joining us today. So as Steve's already talked through, this period's been a pretty large growth period, as you can see from the results on the balance sheet, which we'll go through in a moment. So what it's really showing is that the capex that we've spent, the elevated capex we've spent the past couple of years and this 6 months, and also the pivot towards formwork, and in particular the acquisition of Unispan, which gave us the sales and industrial services business, is really starting to allow this business to hit scale, and we'll go through that in the P&L. So Steve's already gone through the EBITDA, so $11.1 million up to $16.7 million. That's been brought around from the increase in contribution, but as Steve's already mentioned, our actual operating costs reduced as part of contribution from 61% last year to 55%, so we're keeping good control of cost there. When we move down, depreciation, it's basically gone up with our increase in property, plant, equipment, so that's been stable. Our net interest is relatively stable to last year, and last year's was a bit of an anomaly because we still had deferred acquisition costs, which had embedded interest in that. So our pre-tax profit increased from 4.2 to 8.8 million, so 109% increase. Tax expense, as you can see here, our actual tax effective tax rate has gone from 12.7% down to 8.9%. As we've discussed before, we do have quite a large amount of carry forward tax losses, being around $15 million of tax, which translates to about $50 million of taxable income we can offset. So we obviously structure ourselves to make the most of that carry forward tax, so a relatively low effective tax rate, or a very low effective tax rate. So pleasingly, what we have, we get our NPAT underlying increased from $3.4 million to $8 million, or 118% increase. Now then, the difference between NPAT underlying and NPAT reported, we have two items, significant items. We had a bit of a holdover from some acquisition and some adjustments we had to make, some system changes and some redundancies we still had to go. So that's basically the end of that part. And we also had share-based payments. So you can see last period we had a $1.2 million expense. This period we had just under $400,000 now. That's a bit of an anomaly. There was quite a few long-term incentives that didn't vest last year. So we were able to make the use of accounting standards. We were able to write back around $400,000 of those LTVRs into profit. So that part is likely to be higher in the next 6 months, but still, NPAT reported from $1.7 million up to $7.4 million. Almost a 300% increase. So this is where we're seeing scale both at a pre-tax profit and from a tax and NPAT point of view. Now, what that translates to is, as Steve's already mentioned at the beginning, EPS has increased from 1.69 to 3.28 cents per share, or a 94% increase. Now, we have to take into account, that also takes into account in the denominator, we issued 32.6 million shares this 6 months. That included both the $10.5 million share issue we did, plus options and LTVRs invested. So that 3.28 is not just on the back of increased NPAT, it's also taking into account increase in the share base. So that's very pleasing. This a dividend has been announced last night of 1.2 cents, which is 20% franked. Now that's, if you think last interim was 0.75 and last final was 1.15, but because of the profits we've delivered, that's even more than our last final. Moving over to the balance sheet. With the growth in our profit and growth with CapEx we'll go in a moment, our net debt increased from 22.4 to 28.9 million. Now the net debt was up. We had $13 million of capital expenditure, and we've made the payment of the last payment of the deferred consideration for Unispan of around 3.5. So that's sort of the main difference in the net debt. One of the things you'll remember from June, we had quite a large current deficit, about just over $8 million current deficit. At December, it's now flat. So we've actually, this period has seen a massive strengthening of our balance sheet, which is really going to set us up for the next 6 months and future. Now, Steve's already mentioned it. One of the things we're going through at the moment, we all know it, we're going through a worldwide pandemic, supply chain issues, we've got delays in receipts, and costs have gone up. Now, that's obviously impacting us in our working capital. And just to go into parts of that working capital, our receivables have gone up by $1.2 million. Now, that's only a 5% increase compared to the 38% increase in sales. So we've really contained what could have happened with receivables. Our debtors' days have remained stable at 56 days, which is very pleasing. We're not seeing any deterioration in that. However, when we look at the inventory amount, our inventory has gone up by $3.5 million. Now, that's quite a large increase, about 39%, but really that's pretty consistent with the increase in sales. However, if you look at our prepayments, up by almost $3 million, prepayments are very, most of that is prepaid inventory in stock that we, basically that we haven't received yet. So, and also creditors have gone down by $1.7 million. Now those two combined, just over $4 million, that's really because of these logistics and supply chain issues. Now these could have been much, much worse if our procurement team hadn't bettered our supply terms and basically our freight. So this is actually not a very good outcome compared to what it could be. But Saying that, there has been a very large working capital impost in the 6 months because of the supply chain issue and also because of the increase of our just of our results. the only other thing worth mentioning on the balance sheet is obviously our property, plant and equipment has increased by almost $10 million. That's on the back of $13 million of capital expenditure and obviously depreciation and some sales backs higher. So we'll move over to our cash flow. Along with our increasing contribution and EBITDA, the way we define cash operating profit is our pre-AASB 16 EBITDA, less maintenance capex and tax. As you can see, our cash operating profit has increased from 5.5 last first half of 21 to 10.186 million this period, so an 84% increase. And that's basically how we pay dividends between 30 and 50% of cash operating profit. Our interim dividend is just below that 30%, but we see us getting within that range on the final. Below is our net debt bridge. So this just shows you how we get from 22.5 million net debt 30 June through to 29 million in December. Now, our cash flow from operations of around $7.4 million was actually down by $3.3 million from the previous period. Now, as I've said, as we've gone through with the logistics and just our increasing working capital, that reduction of $3.3 million, we've got to compare that to the fact that our working capital impost on inventory, prepayments and creditors has gone up by $8 million. So that $3.3 million compared to an $8 million impost is a pretty good outcome. Now, the only other thing to mention here is you can see our CapEx further to the right of that diagram is we've got $13 million of CapEx and deferred consideration of $3.5 million. In the next 6 months, we don't see CapEx being that high whatsoever, and we obviously won't have any more deferred considerations. They're all gone. So you can actually see that this business will start, if we reduce CapEx and we don't have the investment like we did, this business really will start spinning off a lot of cash. Now moving over to the capital expenditure in the next page, as you can see, there's been quite elevated capital expenditure in this period, and that's to take into account both this year's and what we're seeing coming up in the next year's operations. So $13.1 million of capex in the period, of which just under $10 million was growth. And as such, we've got the list of the main sort of growth items on the right side. But the reality is most of this gear is going towards the industrial services business and the formwork business. This is providing us all the growth. And we're still, we comment on this every results period, but we are very strong on the 40% return requirement for any growth capex, but we are actually getting way above that. So we did some, and you've got to remember this growth capex has a lag. So when we buy growth capex in every period, we're only getting about half of that return in that period because obviously it's got to go over the full amount of the period. Now we did some analysis of this, and the returns we're seeing based on the growth capex we've done from last year and this year, we're getting about a 52% return on EBITDA on this growth capex, and from a contribution point of view, it's about 70%. So we're definitely getting the return on the growth capex, and in fact, as I was saying, 40% is our benchmark, but the reality is we really are aiming more towards the 50% for this at this point of time. I think I will hand back over to Steve.
Thanks, Andrew. So just sort of to wrap up this piece, our strategy remains unchanged. It's consistent, and the consistency of that strategy is one of the success in delivering is one of the strong attributes of the business. So you can see those points. It's about We are the number one formwork hire supplier in the country. We guard that now jealously. We've grown it out of the Queensland model and continue to be the driver. We're making great inroads for the industrial services. We focus continually on bringing in high quality people and promoting within high quality people within the business. The organic growth that we're generating across the other states now, other than Queensland, off the back of the range of products that we've got, is clearly paying benefits. And we are continuing to be open to acquisition opportunities. We're looking at the moment for things that might be of interest to us in the industrial services area, nothing specific at the moment, but we've certainly still got an eye on opportunities that make sense. The people and culture in this business, well, the people are key. It's absolutely vital. We've got incredibly strong depth in the business now. I'm so proud of the people at all levels of ACRO in all states, all branches. Our focus on succession planning and attracting best talent in the industry. There's some examples here. Just in the last 6 months, a new general manager in Victoria, Brad Craven, a new general manager in New South Wales, Peter Ferenbach, both doing tremendous jobs in the business. Peter Belden, who came on board just at the time we really were looking for that expansion in industrial services as national operations manager. I mentioned Devin Field earlier, who's only started in January as the new national engineering manager, and Rob Parabell, who also started only in the last couple of months as a general manager of people and culture. These are incredibly experienced industry people who are adding great depth to the business. But just as importantly, the internal promotions of people like Matt Caparella to Chief Operating Officer, Yuri Rodiger to the National General Manager of Industrial Services, and to Jason Bajan as National General Manager of Natform. These are all very capable young people that are providing great depth and will be the future leaders of ACRO, no doubt about it. And culturally, this is a safety first business. It's about customers and it's about being providing solutions to customers. We want to be the employer of choice, and I think we're certainly becoming that, if we're not definitely that in our industry. Bypassing industry standards, not just setting them but taking them to a whole new level. The culture within the business is very open and honest, probably brutally honest, but remains constructive and non-political and very much a one-team attitude. In terms of the short-term to medium-term, leading into our forecasts for the rest of this year, we will continue to grow industrial services, expand the revenue base, pushing hard in the South Australia and Western Australia market. We're having some success in South Australia, certainly with a couple of good contracts in Olympic Dam. New South Wales formwork, you will see by the end of year results, you will see a significant turnaround in the numbers coming out of the New South Wales formwork business. We are growing market share, and we're specifically focusing on these large projects, Snowy and the Sydney Metro West and Inner West Rail projects that are just about to kick off. We'll continue to capitalise on the project pipeline in Queensland. We will continue to push the organic growth of formwork products into the other states outside of Queensland. The integrated engineering service, I mentioned, I think there's going to be quite a development here in the way we approach the market with Evan Field coming into the business with his experience as running an engineering consultancy company. And Natform, interestingly, we've actually had a pretty quiet 6 months in Natform in New South Wales. In terms of COVID impact, probably the only part of our business that's had any impact due to a number of projects being delayed, but that's all turning around now. Our forward order book for Natform and what we're seeing for the next 6 months is better than we've ever seen in the business. And, I would comment on, despite the significant improvement in EBITDA we've had across the whole of ACRO, the Natform New South Wales business has actually had a soft 6 months because of the project delays. But the second 6 months, and it's already starting now, you see it, incredible increase in revenues out of that business. And as I said, in terms of the work won on the forward order book, never been as strong as it is today. So then that takes us to our outlook. So we're very pleased to provide upgraded guidance. We're extremely comfortable with the guidance that we're giving today for the rest of the FY22 year. So you can see we've upgraded our revenue forecast to a 140-145 range. Compared to the previous 130-135, we're now forecasting EBITDA to be between 33.5 and 34.5, so effectively a $2 million increase from what our previous guidance was. Similarly with NPAT now, up to sort of 15.5 to 16.5, again, circa $2 million upgrade previous, and EPS in the range now of 6.2 to 6.5. And as I said, we're extremely comfortable with that guidance. And we give it because of a couple of reasons. Firstly, we're already through January and we're halfway through February, so we've got a very good idea of what those results already look like, and we're pretty happy. Our secured higher revenue contracts being up for 7 months now to January, up 43% on the same period last year. And then the capex that we've ordered off the back of the capital raise, we haven't seen any of that gear arrive yet. So despite, we spent a lot of money on capital in the first half, but that was already planned. The capital raise was to give us that second impetus, I guess, for what we have now ordered for gear that won't be arriving until the last quarter of this financial year. So we will be getting as Andrew said, minimum 40, and our result shows better than 50 on that year when it arrives, April, May, June. You will see some impact of that in the last quarter. The major impacts of that will be in FY23. And a lot of that equipment is destined for markets outside of Queensland, but we'll continue that organic growth push. And clearly now industrial services, you know, we're now forecasting revenues to be circa $43 million in industrial services in FY22. So all of that picture together gives us the confidence to give the updated guidance that we had. So that's it for the presentation at the moment. So James, if I can hand back to you, and we're happy to answer any questions or take any comments from any of the participants.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. You may register a question by pressing 01 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. There may be a slight delay whilst participants register and names are collated. Please stand by. Our first question is from Alex Liu. Alex, your line is open.
Yeah, thanks, and morning, Steve and Andrew. So I've got a couple of questions. So I might just start with project delays, and you mentioned that NatForm, you were seeing some project delays in New South Wales, but just wanted to confirm, are you seeing, you know, with the labour shortages and supply chain constraints, are you seeing you know, any movements in project timeline in, I guess, the other states and also the formwork market as well?
Alex, we are, and it's working in our favour. So if you think about what we do, I mean, we hire equipment. So if we've got jobs that are going and we've got equipment on jobs that are experiencing some delay, we just keep charging, right? So the one area that has been affected was because, well, that form was because there was a number of new projects, one, that didn't commence when they were expected to in that first half. So I say again, the results that we've produced are despite actually having a relatively soft 6 months for that business, but that's all changing now. So we're seeing serious uplift. Now, I think the interesting thing too, and this is post, obviously, the half-year results, we all know that, you know, Australia's had its greatest COVID impact through January. Well, we're through January. We're extremely happy with the result we produced in January. It was far better than we expected it to be. And, you know, I would say, you know, and we did, you know, we had, obviously, as you'd expect, a number of our staff infected with COVID over that January period, the Christmas into January period. Didn't interrupt our operations at all. You know, we got, despite having, you know, quite a degree of absenteeism, we got through very well. And people applied themselves extremely well. And, you know, I can't see anything but, upside for us through this situation because, you know, we are, and I'll say too, in terms of our labour for, you know, the major shutdown works, again, the guys have done a remarkable job in making sure that we've got enough staff, despite COVID issues, to be able to provide all the requirements for all of our major industrial shutdowns, you know, Snowy, Mount Piper, et cetera. So, you know, say again, for us, as a hirer of equipment, primarily, it's not a bad situation.
No, thanks for that, Steve. And maybe if I just ask about industrial services, please. And, you know, that business has been strong, you know, through FY21, expecting another very strong result in FY22. And, you know, you've been very successful in expanding that outside of the Queensland market. So could you maybe just talk about, you know, some of the things that, I guess, you know, setting you guys apart from your competitors and, you know, why you're winning, you know, the work?
Yeah, I think I've spoken about this in the past, Alex. We've had a very strong track record of being a service provider to that market in Queensland. And we were strongly encouraged by our customers in Queensland who also had operations in New South Wales to look at the New South Wales market, because I think the service provision they were getting out of Queensland was superior to what they were experiencing in New South Wales. So, you know, that coupled with bringing on someone like Peter Belden, who's had 40-odd years experience of running these sorts of contracts across the country, is probably the best of what he does. We already complement the staff, the strong staff that we had, and we've made investments. So we invested in new equipment that, again, standing us apart. So some of the work we mentioned before, some of the work we do in some of the power stations inside furnaces that requires absolutely specialist equipment that we were prepared to invest into, all that stuff is setting us apart. And, you know, it's seriously at the moment, there's basically not a contract that we've targeted in New South Wales that we haven't won in the last 12 months.
Okay, great. And last one from me, just on a, from a risk perspective, and you know, I guess you've obviously got guidance out there, you're very confident with that guidance, but maybe just talk about some of the risks that you see in the second half and going into FY23, please, Steve.
I'm thinking. COVID. You know, what does just COVID continue to play a role? And, you know, none of us expected, you know, Omicron, I guess, in December. So I can remember in my December management meeting saying to all the guys in the room, it'll be on the Zoom, it'll be great to meet face-to-face for a meeting in February, and that's all changed. I think that continues to be the issue. I think, look, we're facing challenges with working capital. We're really, really, really fortunate. We've got a great banking partner in Westpac who have been incredibly supportive with, you know, helping us through working capital issues, making sure we've got absolutely more headroom than we need for facing any of those issues. And as Andrew mentioned earlier, Alex, you know, going into next year, you know, we don't expect to be spending, we expect to be reducing our capital expenditure by upwards of $10 million into next year. On a, what we will see again, a we believe, an improved EBITDA result again into next year. So the cash generation in this business is going to improve significantly. So, mate, I don't see any. The only risk I'm seeing is COVID project delay related.
And probably some macro stuff. So there's stuff going on in Europe, as we all know.
Yeah.
That could impact some of our timber
supply
and
chain.
Obviously,
yeah.
Supply chain,
yeah.
Stuff. But that stuff's out of our control, obviously.
Okay, great. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to queue for a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. Our next question is from Raju Ahmed. Your line is now open.
Hi, Steve and Andrew. Hope you guys are well. Couple of questions from me. The first one... if we concentrate just on December 2021, from what I can gather, industry contacts and whatnot, the month has been affected, generally speaking, due to wet weather and obviously COVID absenteeism. So I would hazard a guess that your labor hire revenue probably was maybe below budget or something along those lines. So the question for you is, do you see a catch-up on that front in the second half of the financial year? So that obviously bolsters the revenue on that front and the earnings. What's your view there?
We actually had a cracking December and a cracking January. Far better than what our budget was for those months. But we also expect to be trading well ahead of our budgets for the next 5 months. So, no, look, we didn't... I don't think that was relevant to us, Raj. I don't think we had lower revenues in December that will be caught up because of delays in projects. We said we had a very, very good December. We had an extremely good January. Our forward forecasts are very strong. So... I don't think that's been a relevant issue for our business.
Okay, no, that's good to hear. So in terms of wet weather and so on, so the main risk on that front, if any, is the ability to get labor on site should there be those sorts of issues. Would that be it? And is that the only risk to consider?
Yeah, so sorry, we did have about a 1 week impact on the Karoi-Takara project. As you know, there was a lot of flooding in central Queensland around that early Christmas, early January period. So we had about a 1 week delay, but that's all it was. It was 1 week. But look, to go back to sort of the point I made to Alex earlier, if it's a wet weather issue, whilst it might affect, if we've got labour on a job, it might affect that. If it delays the job and we've got higher equipment out there, then happy days for us.
Okay, fantastic. The second one around the engineers that you've got, you've sort of highlighted that the actual professional engineers count in the business has doubled over the years. Is there a correlation or something of anecdotal nature you can give us whereby one engineering FTE equals X dollars in revenue? Can we sort of, from an analyst investor perspective, make that sort of connection?
I've never done that comparative, Raj. We could do it. I mean, if you look at the business, you know, when we listed, we were turning over $60 million. We're now turning over $140 million, say, right? And we've doubled our engineering team. So there might be some correlation in that. But look, Andrew, we might take that offline. Maybe have a chat to you about that later on.
Okay. Now, what I was trying to get to was for the benefit of the audience as well, including myself, is are you planning to add further heads into that part of the business? And how do we think about the revenue profile there?
Yeah, I just think we just need to. We will judge that as we develop. You know, we'll judge that over the course of the next 12 to 18 months as we get closer to the peak of the infrastructure boom. You know, we're not at the peak yet. We're gearing up for that. Look, I think we're partly in this area. We're actually opportunistic, Raj. You know, we found. You know, I wanted to promote Matt Caparella to the Chief Operating Officer role. There was a role that was needed in the business that we were missing in terms of complete equipment management across the whole of the country, and Matt has filled that. And it was just great that we were able to find somebody Matt had a strong relationship with Evan Field. But to have someone of his calibre willing to effectively wrap up his business and come and join us as our National Engineering Manager was quite an industry coup. So, just have a look how this next couple of years of this peak goes. It may still require more engineering resources for the business.
Okay. The last one, around the supply chain management, I mean, it's clear that you guys did a fantastic job on that front. I like the way you've sort of, you guys have extrapolated the issues and the remediation. And I'm referring to slide 15 here. Where you talked about you renegotiated the trading terms with suppliers and then you sort of bypassed intermediaries and so on. Is that now set in stone such that even when, let's say, the world normalizes with all these shipping challenges, you're still going to continue with the benefits that you've been able to extract in the last couple of months so that as you grow as a business more and more, you get further procurement and scale efficiencies kicking in? Is that the right way to think about this?
Well, I think again, you've got to adapt to the circumstances that are presented to you. So we had to, because we were finding it hard to get containers out of, you know, the logistics companies. So our guys went direct to the shipping lines, and that worked really well. But I think you've just got to be able to adapt to what's presented to you. You know, we saw a working capital situation in the business presenting itself that could have been far more difficult to deal with than what it is actually now. We saw that starting to develop, and we jumped on it really quickly. And one of the major things was about supply, you know, negotiating better terms with suppliers. I mean, we were paying for material in some cases up to 5 months before it was arriving in the country. And we've renegotiated a lot of that. And I think you've just got to be nimble. You know, you've got to adapt and you've got to be nimble to the circumstances that are in front of you. And, you know, we're fortunate that we've got some very capable people in this area who do exactly that.
I reckon, Raj, there's actually upside when the world normalises in the next year or so, because there are still payments we're making that are very tight. So I actually think there's more upside than downside.
Okay, yeah, that's helpful. I might leave it there. So thank you for your time.
Thanks, Raj.
We appear to have no further questions queued at this time. I'll hand the call back to you.
Okay, thank you, James, and thanks everybody for taking the time to hear our presentation this morning. And we look forward to the next few months, and we look forward to talking to you again come August with the full year results. And very confident of what this next period will deliver for the business. So thank you again for your time. Cheers.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. Thank you all for attending, and you may disconnect your lines.